The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Glad you're here. Macron has won the historic French election. Now the hard work begins. And the Russians hacked in the last 2 days. There's a blackout in France, so the media can't cover anything that is happening in the last 2 days. The Russians hacked in and did pretty much a WikiLeaks release exactly the way they did it here in the United States. We know the Russians did it. We know exactly who did it, and it is exactly the same group of Russians that did it to the DNC. Why are they doing that? We'll explain. Also, Folds of Honor, a way for you to honor our vets. It's going on now live, and we'll tell you all about it. The next threat that may be coming our way, and Lawrence Jones, who works for The Blaze, he was on Fox and Friends over the weekend, and he took on Wanda Sykes, the comedian, if you can call her that, and she was saying that anybody who stands against healthcare, well, you're a racist. Lawrence, who is black, says, no, that's not true. Wait until you hear what happened to Lawrence this weekend for taking that stand. That and more begins right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah. We have Greg Abbott coming on in just a few minutes. Last night, Greg Abbott signed a ban on so-called sanctuary cities, which allows police to ask about a person's immigration status and threatens sheriffs with jail if they don't cooperate with federal authorities. He did so here in Texas over intense opposition from immigrant rights groups and Democrats who say Texas is just becoming Arizona. No, it's not. Let's face it, the reason why so many people come to America is because we're a nation of laws, and Texas is doing its part to keep it that way. He did this last night because there were going to be big protests today as he was signing it, so he's like, just do it early. So he signed it last night. I love this guy. I think Greg Abbott is the most reasoned, sensible, just right down the line governor I have ever witnessed, or I've ever lived with, or voted for in a state. I've never seen somebody as even keeled as Greg Abbott. Would you agree with that, Stu?
Yeah, I mean, he does not show emotion. He doesn't seem to act because of emotion.
Yeah, he's not flamboyant. Right. He's not throwing bombs. He's not doing anything. He's just like, no, this is not right. And here's why. And he reasons it out, and then he just does it.
But he acts on it.
Yeah. I really like him. So we have him coming up in just a few minutes.
They have to do, one thing they have to do as that kind of works its way through, not only through Texas, but through a lot of states who are dealing with this, and obviously the president has made it a big priority. They have to define actually what a sanctuary city is, because there's a lot of, sanctuary city isn't a real term per se. It's something that we've kind of like talked about. It's to summarize the city who's ignoring some federal regulation. But you have to come up with an actual definition for these cities to comply with, and now, because it's a priority of the president in particular, a lot of these cities are saying, hey, well, what is it? Like, what do we have to do?
And you have to comply to the law.
You have to follow the law.
Right? How hard is that?
Well, it seems easy. However, they can't define it. The cities have asked the administration, hey, what do we have to do? And they're like, well, we don't have that fully fleshed out yet.
But do you...
I mean,
how hard is that?
Well, there's also some things that, you know, judges are in the middle of ruling on. So it's not like they're just ignoring the responsibility to figure out a definition. But that definition has to be fleshed out. And of course, at that point, whatever that definition is the absolute maximum any of these cities will do, right? So you have to try to encompass as much of these problems as possible in that definition, because they're not going to go any further. They're not going to work on the spirit of the law, that's for sure.
So let's change subjects here. Let me give you this. Here is a liberal writer, Kurt Eichenwald. He works for MSNBC and Newsweek. Here's what he said about the Obamacare replacement bill. As one with pre-existing conditions, I hope every GOPer who voted for Trump Care sees a family member get long-term condition, lose insurance, and die. Because I want them to be tortured. GOPers only gain empathy when they're touched by the consequences, never before. Excuse me?
Special.
Now, Andrea Mitchell, this is just pathetic. Andrea Mitchell demands the HHS secretary defend the white male members of Congress. Listen to this audio.
Let's talk about women. I mean, when we looked at the Rose Garden and the celebration of this on Thursday, they were all, mostly all men and white men at that. There was no diversity there. Women's health issues arguably are going to be disproportionately affected. Take a look at this. Obamacare includes maternity and newborn care, preventative care, mammograms, cervical cancer screenings, birth control, all of this under the essential package, no longer required under this House bill.
Andrea, come on. Look at that picture. Congresswoman Diane Black, the chair of the Budget Committee, I was standing next to her. Seema Verma, the administrator of CMS, I was standing right next to her.
Dozens and dozens of people, you can cite two or three women?
These are prominent individuals who are leading in this area of health care. But the goal, as I mentioned, is to make certain that every single American, men, women, rich, poor, old, young, have the kind of coverage that they want for themselves and for their families, not that government forces them to buy. That's the change.
Can I just...
That's so weird.
Can I just say, I am so tired of the gender stuff. I'm so tired of the black-white stuff. I'm so tired of it. Aren't we all supposed to be equal? Aren't we all supposed to be equal? Aren't we all supposed to just look at each other as brothers and sisters? Isn't that it?
Why be judged on merit, right?
Right, and judged on the merit of what things are. Why does everything now have to come down to you're in this category or that category? And have you thought about this category? I'm thinking about human beings. Now, I'm not somebody who supported this bill. But this stuff makes me want to defend the people who did even write the bill.
But whether Stop the bill it. Is fantastic or horrific, you don't make decisions on the bill based on people's genitals. That is not the right way to... You know what? I really respect your opinion, but you got the wrong genitals.
Hang
sorry.
On just a second.
I mean, that's
that,
not a
that
sensible...
That doesn't even matter.
I mean, and that, right, how do you even know?
Yeah.
Unless you ask them how they do,
identify on a particular day. Here's Andrea Mitchell. I would have loved for him to say, Andrea, are you judging these people by the way they're dressed? Are you identifying their genders by the way they look or the way they dress? You don't know how many of there identify as a woman. How dare you, Andrea?
It's that ridiculous.
It is that ridiculous. It truly is that ridiculous. And I'm just sick of it. Remember I used to say, spit yourself out of the system. The only way to survive is to spit yourself out of the system. Here's the big loogie that you're spitting yourself out. Here's the one that you really, everybody turns their head as you're getting ready to spit it out. Get out of this kind of debate. Just get out. Because there's nothing good that comes from any of this.
But it's everywhere. It affects everything.
Sure.
I mean,
you know what? Sarah, do we have the Eric Liu audio? I want to play this. I had Eric on Thursday, and Thursday on television. Here's a guy who we vehemently disagree with. Listen to this conversation.
How do we find people
And this goes to both sides. How do we find people on the left or the right that just will surrender? I don't want to win anymore.
Yeah.
I just want to stop.
Yeah.
How do we find them? Because it's courage.
It is.
That takes profound courage.
You know, it is a, there's a little bit of a chicken and egg to it, that you can't start that cycle till you start that cycle.
Yeah. But,
let's put Tavis Smiley aside. In this moment right now, I will own my piece of it. I think the amount that Eric Liu has contributed to the toxicity and polarization of our political culture today is a small fraction of that which perhaps Glenn Beck, who has a much larger voice and platform, has contributed. But it's really not about whether it's 95-5, 99-1, 60-40, whatever, right? My piece of this is, I certainly over the years have not only contributed to a polarization of the rhetoric, where, you know, there's been I wrote a piece where I said libertarians are the new communists, right? Because they're just dogmatic and they preach not control, but they just want to control what they're not control, right? And, you know, and I did it partly for effect. But guess what? So did you. Because we understood that in this media environment that we just said, hey, not my responsibility. I'm just playing in the game that that I walked into. That in this game, we both knew that if we dialed it up that way, and I called you a communist, and you called me a communist back or something, you call me a fascist, that on each side, we'd pile up the likes.
Yes.
Right? There have been times where I watched a debate unfold and watched people on my side start hardening into these positions that are kind of a caricature, right? And I just said, you know what? That's my side. You know, I know they got a good heart, and I'm going to let that slide. Or to take a very live example right now, plenty of folks, you and I have talked about this, are saying to me, hey, Eric, it's wonderful that you're now quite alert to the dangers of executive overreach now that Donald Trump is in the White House. But why didn't you say anything when President Obama was using executive orders willy-nilly and saying outright that he would do so to bypass Congress? Guess what my answer is? Yeah, you're kind of right. You're kind of right. During those years, I didn't say anything. You know why? Because I liked the outcomes that Obama was advancing through his executive orders.
Right? And that is so refreshing. And for my side, that was against all of the executive orders. To watch them now say, well, we have to do something. No, what we have to do is abide by our principles in the Constitution. We abide by our principles. and it's the, nobody sees that the game has just switched chairs, switched sides, and we've switched arguments, and it's going to switch again.
Yeah.
And in the end, nobody has any credibility. Everybody has to shoot each other, because everyone knows that the other side, whichever side you're on, doesn't mean it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it. And so you've got nothing left.
You and I have this thing in common, which we probably many years ago wouldn't admit so readily, but that is, you and I are both actually earnest believers in ideas.
Yeah.
Right. There are lots and lots of folks in politics right now, especially national politics, for whom it really is a game or performance art or just, you know, positioning. And it will flip the moment circumstances flip. Right. And I think the thing that, going back to your question, like how do we break this cycle? Part A of the answer is we break this cycle. You just got to start reaching out and saying.
I keep telling people, you're just going to have to kiss a ton of frogs.
Yeah.
You're going to kiss a frog and they'll swear to you they're a prince, and then you're going to go, nope, that wasn't you.
Yeah. But there's nothing lost. Here's the thing. There's nothing lost in doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the things that people, they sometimes imagine, because our politics has become this tribalized, polarized, kabuki theater game. People think that it's all zero sum, that it's a battle to the death, and that if your side makes a gain, that must mean that my side is losing. And my answer is actually no. Like, the word you used a few minutes ago, I think, is extraordinary. Surrender. Right? Surrender. Like, I think one of the deepest insights that we're all going to wake up to eventually as a country is there are lots and lots of times in politics where you advance by yielding. right? Instead of jamming through and thinking, my job is to grind this other guy to dust, if I say, hey, my job is to recognize that politics is a game of infinite repeat play, and you win some and you lose some, and I'll concede this point, I won't fight this point, and I know next time I'm going to get the point or whatever, that's a different mindset, right? And yielding isn't being weak. Yielding is saying, we share responsibility for this thing, right? And it's not just a game. It's not just a cynical performance. We actually own the republic. We're actually, you and I, 1791, you know, you're Bill saying we are stewards of something called the Bill of Rights. We are stewards. You know, I would, if I started a clothing company, it would be 1868, because I like the 14th Amendment, right? I like the way in which the 14th Amendment redeems promises that had been made in the original Constitution, but not actually delivered upon.
I would agree with you, but I
like it too.
I go back to everything past really the first 10 amendments are just, no, stupid, listen, this is what we were saying. The first 10 really cover all of it. The other amendments are just like, oh my gosh, do I really have to spell this out?
You've just done con law in 30 seconds right there.
Right, I mean, it's ridiculous.
No, the 14th Amendment, but again, I mean, yes. This idea that fundamentally, you know, whether you're thinking about the Bill of Rights,
yeah,
or you're thinking about the 14th Amendment and this idea of a new birth of freedom, the idea is this isn't a game. Like, you and I are meant to disagree on stuff, and we are meant to...
And it's good that we disagree.
It's great to disagree, but we disagree because we both actually believe in ideas, and we both love this country.
Boy, when's the last time you heard somebody like that?
It's great.
And I'm starting to find them, and it's good. And those are the people who are spitting themselves out of the system. And like, I'm not playing the game anymore. Just not going to do it. And we'll be able to make progress if we can find those people in your own life.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I will be my job. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we have won.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
So, Eric Liu was the audio that I just played from last Thursday's television show on the Blaze TV. And it's a fascinating hour. And what he said was, there's a lot of people that are playing the games. He said, but you and I both believe deeply in something. And so we can meet on the battlefield of ideas. The question is, does Kurt Eichenwald believe? I think there are a lot of people that believe this kind of stuff on both sides. He wrote, as one with pre-existing conditions, I hope every GOPer who voted for Trump care sees a family member get long-term condition, lose their insurance, and then die. I want them to be tortured. GOPers only gain empathy when they're touched by the consequences, never before. Now, is that rhetoric or is that something that he actually believes? I think it's something that he actually believes because they've never reached out and sat down with somebody. They've just seen the caricatures, the cartoons on TV, you know, or in sound bites. They don't necessarily know anyone because they live in their own little bubble. I'll show you the consequences of this in somebody who's standing up, Lawrence Jones, standing up as a black man for his own community. The white liberals don't like it.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
It is 8727-BECK. Welcome to Monday with the Glenn Beck Program.
You played that great clip from Eric Liu from last week where he is saying, I think, everything that every conservative wants to hear about someone who was on the left defending Obama all those years. Now that you're critical of Trump, well, where were you during Obama? And he said, you know what? You're right. Yeah. I should have been there during Obama and I wasn't. And it's going to be an interesting thing to see play out because I don't want to downplay how difficult that is for someone like Eric Liu to do. It's hard to admit that you were wrong. It's hard to admit that your side was wrong.
We did. Under Obama,
and
many of people in our audience also did.
Yeah, And so, however, that's the easier part of it, because it's going to take time to see. And I think people rightfully should be skeptical of anyone on the left who's saying now, well, you know what, Trump is doing the wrong thing, and I was wrong for Obama, because it's going to take time until you see a Democrat in office.
Yeah, because they said, they accused us of only saying that. Oh, you're only saying that because your side.
Right, exactly.
Not your guy. And we're like, no, we are aware now.
Right.
We woke up.
And we've been critical of Trump for many of these things as well throughout. So it's going to take time for that to actually happen.
The ones with real courage will stand.
Yeah, and I think, by the way, that's totally fair. It was totally fair of the left to be skeptical of us during the Obama administration.
Because
it could have been just political lines. And the same way we should be skeptical of someone like Eric Liu.
Right.
However, like, that is, it's still, you have to recognize how important that is as a first step to go out there and say, you know what, my side, when they were doing these things, was wrong. I was wrong on that issue. And that is, you know, being able to maintain that when your side regains power is the real test of whether you meant it or not.
So one of the guys who is taking a really hard stand, and it's not going to matter who's in office, is Lawrence Jones, who works for The Blaze. And over the weekend, he went on to Fox to eviscerate Wanda Sykes for labeling Obamacare repeal as racist. She said that on The View, and here is what Lawrence said over the weekend.
Sism.
Yeah.
That's it. They hate having a black in it, and they want to get rid of it. That's what it is.
Well, I just think it's quite comical that the liberals are so concerned about black America when they have failed my community for years, especially when it comes to health care, especially when it comes to jobs. I think it's important to know, Abby, that 30-hour rule in Obamacare affected my community harshly. A lot of us weren't able to get jobs and couldn't get the necessary hours because of that 30-hour rule. So I think it's really comical that the liberals are all of a sudden concerned about black America.
Now, what happened after that? Lawrence Jones is here to tell us.
Yeah, so I got a slew of death threats. One, and a lot of these were white progressives. This one guy said, a white-loving black person that is a traitor to his people, he deserves to be strung up.
So a very compassionate white progressive was advocating that for lynching.
Right. And I finally figured out why they're doing this now, because it used to be some black folks saying, you know, your Uncle Tom. And now those people are starting to die out, because I've started to really connect with my community. They know I'm banging the left. I'm banging the right. I'm consistent on my belief system. I'm advocating for them.
You used to be a guy who you voted for. You campaigned for Barack Obama.
Campaigned for him.
When you were
a teenager. Got trained by the left. Went to D.C., hung around Nancy Pelosi, all of them. And I saw the light. And I didn't go to the Republican Party. I became a conservative libertarian. And now I'm fighting for the issues. I'm not concerned about political parties. It's about the issues. And so it's kind of comical to me to watch the left try to attack me and say, hey, you're a shield for the right.
So
when
why
I supported the guy.
Why do you think they're doing it?
Because they see me connecting with my community. And they have this hold on them right now, where they continue to make emotional arguments that the right is racist. And how am I racist? I'm fighting for you. I'm connecting with you. And so they seek to discredit me, say I'm a shill, I'm a sellout. How do you call me a sellout? And you're white. So it's just comical right now.
So what has changed with your community? Are they starting to, are people in the black community starting to say, like you did under Obama, you know, I think both political parties are full of crap.
Yeah. I think people are starting to feel it. The paychecks that they're receiving, the loss of health care, jobs leaving America. I think when you have a party that makes everything about emotions, and then you look at your bank statement, when you're feeling being in poverty, I think it starts to wake you up real quick. And so for a while, they were able to survive on President Obama because he was the first black president. And you love the culture. You love seeing somebody that looks like you. But now those days are over. So what do you have now? Can you make things about women or race again? Say Donald Trump hates you when Donald Trump is advocating for a lot of black folks with his new deal for black America. He's talking about immigration, which a lot of black folks are upset that they prioritize illegal immigrants and give them jobs. And it's hurting the black community.
You know, it's really funny because you only hear on the immigration front, you only hear that this is about racism, that whites are racist taking the jobs. But they completely ignore the black community, mm-hmm. which is the first to get hit by this mm-hmm. for the lower paying jobs. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear anything.
Well, this is what you hear. It's called the New Underground Railroad. That's what the left calls this. They call border control the slave catchers. And so if there's anything I don't think there's anything more offensive to suggest that the experience of illegal immigrants that came here willingly is like slaves that were brought on a slave ship that couldn't go back to their country.
Do you hear that, though, from people that are not like you?
Oh, yes. And I think that's when the shift started to come. Because I put all the left on notice, Maxine Waters. I mean, how can you say, the Congressional Black Caucus, how can you say you advocate for the black community and use this type of language? It's contradicting.
But I have found so much contradiction over the last 40 years. I mean, you look at the black community, and they do not vote their values. Mm-mm. They are in the 1950s,
mm-hmm. traditional.
Yeah, traditional. They were the strongest family unit in the country.
Yeah.
Now we're told because slavery broke up families, everything else. No, that's not what did it.
Mm-mm.
You guys came together
mm-hmm.
and you made your family stronger. The strongest family unit in mm-hmm. the country was the black family unit. And so what's happened? The left has dismantled and destroyed the community. And I mean, I've heard the stuff, your traditional values, but mm-hmm. you voted against those values mm-hmm. for 40 years.
I think the right does a terrible job in connecting with the community. I think we have to take some ownership as well, going to the community, showing up. I think because the black community has voted 90% of the time for the left, we don't show up. And we're just like, okay, it's just not worth it. It's just not worth it. I refuse to give up. I feel like it's my mission. I feel like it's my calling. And if you win 2 or 3, 4 people a day, I consider that a win. There was a time where I would go on social media and I felt like my community hated me because they didn't feel like I was fighting for them. That's starting to change.
You were an investigator mm-hmm. For Dallas police.
Yeah.
You've started doing these
for private investigations.
You've started to do these investigative pieces now on the Blaze. You did one that's caused a lot of controversy recently. On medical marijuana.
Yeah.
And it is the smartest piece I think I've ever seen on medical marijuana. It's not about, everybody else takes the pot smokers and they take the angle of, those people who want to get high.
Yeah.
You actually made it about medicine.
Yeah.
And you have, I will tell you, I might even talk to the governor about it today. My daughter has seizures and they can't make them stop.
Yeah.
And the head of one of the big, I don't want to stick him out, but head of one of the big hospitals here in Texas, one of the biggest, and he is the head guy, said, the first thing, if you can get your hands on it, that I would try would be marijuana oil.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make you high. You can't buy it here in Texas.
I think a lot of people are dealing with the law system, and I was a private investigator and worked a lot with Dallas Police. I went to the Reserve Academy, and I respect the law, but this is medicine for some. And when you get to see my video, you see a guy with cerebral palsy do kickboxing with.
But what's the difference between that and a sanctuary city? Obey the law, enforce the law.
Right.
Well, this is medicine. Well, this is these poor people that, you know, are escaping oppression. I mean,
that's why I'm advocating for the state to change the law.
Right.
And you're seeing a lot of states do it. You're seeing some cities. Dallas just passed the ordinance where if you have below 5 ounces, they'll just give you a ticket.
Yeah, but it's not even that. It's not even change the law for pot. It is. It's for medical use. Is the real difference.
Right. But my argument is that where is the line?
I know.
You have a lot of veterans with depression, and we're seeing the veteran suicide rate drop when they use it.
Yeah. It's interesting because, medical marijuana is not a controversial topic.
It's not.
The polling, most recent poll on should you be able to use marijuana for medical purposes, 94-5.
Of course.
I mean,
but it is not. No, I think the issue here is, and you saw this certainly in California, which is, the slippery slope argument has never been more accurate. They tried to pitch, we need medical marijuana. We're going to have these dispensaries where and now it's just blatantly, obviously legal. You walk in there, you get your card and you get your pot for recreational purposes.
Right.
Now, I don't personally care, honestly, about recreational use, but still, I can understand the argument because, people say, well, you can have it for medical purposes. Well, it never stays that way.
Right.
It's just a first step.
Right.
So it is an interesting debate from that perspective, but I don't see how you don't have it legal for medical purposes. It's going to happen. It's going to be legal for recreational purposes. It already is. And how many states?
I was talking to a guy who's dying with cancer yesterday. And he said, have you heard about the mother's breast milk thing going on? I think it's in Sweden or Denmark. And I said, no. And he said, a woman has had this theory for a long time that breast milk could cure cancer.
Yeah.
And tried to go in and get people to do research, but because it didn't involve big pharma or big money anywhere, nobody was interested. And finally, she got enough people to back a study. And it's not conclusive, but it shows at least real strong leading indications that breast milk actually goes right to cancer and destroys a lot of the cancer.
Wow.
And, there's a few of these
studies are still in progress on that.
Yeah, they're still in progress. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We are close to things like this, and we've got to get the business side out of the way, and we have to get the FDA side out of the way and start, especially when it comes to death, start moving these things along a little faster, perhaps. Lawrence, thank you so much. Lawrence Jones from The Blaze. You can read all about it at theblaze.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Stu is instantly a skeptic on the breast milk thing.
100% skeptic, without any information. I'm always skeptical of the claim of, well, you know what? There was no one who cared. They didn't. All they wanted was money. These big companies, and you know what? This one mom decided she was going to cure cancer with paper airplanes, and no one wanted it because you can't make money off of paper airplanes.
Okay, well,
I mean, that story is
right, well,
like
hang on just a second.
Hang on.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe the story that I don't believe that, car companies have kept, the flying car down or the everlasting battery or mm-hmm. anything like that?
Right.
However, I do believe in the story of Tucker. I mean, that's fact, where mm-hmm. they'll put you out of business if you try to disrupt their assembly line.
There's always competition, right? I mean, I think any company that saw the idea and collusion, it's possible, less likely today than back in the Tucker days.
Yes,
absolutely. It's harder to do. I mean, with the internet and everything, it's almost impossible.
Yes.
But the idea that companies, first of all, that there's not enough good people who just don't want human beings to die from cancer because they want to enrich themselves. I just don't think it's true. But beyond that, I think they all see it. The profit motive is a good thing. And
yeah,
they do see the benefits of curing cancer financially. I think they actually are motivated by profit. Thank God they are.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I also think that some pharmaceutical companies will hold on some things because they got another one that needs to run its course.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Greg Abbott last night went on Facebook and signed a new bill into law stopping sanctuary cities. Well, some say the problem is Texas doesn't have any real self-declared sanctuary cities. And how dare him do this on Facebook? What a coward. Or a genius? You decide. Greg Abbott, the governor of the great state of Texas, joins us right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Governor Greg Abbott, I think the best governor in the entire United States. Welcome, sir. How are you?
Glenn, I'm doing great. Great to visit with you again.
Great to have you on. So last night, you go on Facebook and you sign a bill. This is the first time I think anybody has ever done this on Facebook. Why'd you choose Facebook to do this? Why'd you do it last night?
It won't be the last time either. Listen, this is the 21st century. We've seen an evolution with regard to digital media, with regard to the way that elected officials are communicating directly with their constituents. We saw it first with what Barack Obama did with digital media. We saw what happened in the Trump campaign. And now this is the next step. And listen, I have more than a million viewers, and it's important that I be able to connect directly with them, unfiltered through other media. Obviously, other media across the entire country has picked this up and spread the story, which we are proud that they did. But you can expect going forward, there'll be many more ways in which we are communicating directly with the people who are our citizens, the people that I have to answer to every single day.
I have to tell you, Governor, I'd love to spend some more time talking to you about that. I think that is great. I know that we are living in, everybody knows, we're living in a time now where you don't need a middleman anymore, and it will change things. And I'd love to talk about the ramifications of that if we have more time. But let me go to what you signed. Texas doesn't have any self-declared sanctuary city, and the Trump administration is having a hard time defining what a sanctuary city is. So what did you sign in last night?
Well, first, let's talk about terminology. Then, if you don't mind, let me correct you a tiny bit.
Sure.
A synonym of a sanctuary city is an outlaw city. It is a city or county that refuses to follow the law. And in the state of Texas, it is my opinion that we do have a self-declared sanctuary city in Travis County. For your listeners, Travis County is the county in which Austin, Texas is located. And the sheriff of Travis County has a written policy that is tangible for anybody to put their hands on that says that Travis County is not going to comply with ICE detainer requests. In fact, the Travis County policy is such that if a person who is in the United States illegally and has either committed or been accused of a very violent crime, such as sexual assault of a minor, armed robbery, working in conspiracy with the drug cartels, any of those crimes and far more, the sheriff of Travis County, who's responsible for upholding the law and keeping our citizens safe, is going to release them even if the federal government has a request to hold them for the federal government to come and take them. That, I think, is the quintessential definition of a sanctuary city. Travis County is the target and subject of this law that I signed last night.
Okay, so now what happens to Sheriff Hernandez? What happens to, I mean, Dallas is also a city that kind of plays games with sanctuary. What happens to these counties, these cities?
The new Texas law imposes very serious penalties. One is going to be fines that can add up to $25,000 per day. Two is that these officials, let's say in this case the Travis County Sheriff, can be subject to forced removal from office by the Texas Attorney General. Three is these officials can be subject to jail time if they have sanctuary city policies or if they refuse to comply with the ICE detainer requests.
Excuse my ignorance on this, but I remember hearing this a long time ago, and it may be complete bunk, that the sheriff is the only one that actually answers directly to the people. Police officers, police commissioners, et cetera, don't. But that this is a separate office that doesn't really answer to any chain of command. Is that true or not?
Correct in this regard, and that is police officers are not elected by the people. Sheriffs are elected by the people. That said, sheriffs are one of the county officials who have to work in conjunction with county governance, which in the state of Texas, the leader of county government is called the county judge, and then there's a county commissioner's court that the sheriff must work with. It's the county commissioner's court that sets the budget for the sheriff.
How do you respond to people who are saying this is going to terrorize the Latino community?
Well, first, let's be clear about something, and that is that just because someone is here illegally doesn't at all mean that they are Hispanic. Remember this, Glenn, and that is more than half of the people who've been coming across our border illegally this past year are not from Mexico. They're coming from across the entire world. So that part of the thesis is wrong. Second is that Texas is an open and welcoming state. In fact, even before Texas was Texas, we've been a blend of Anglo and Hispanic culture. And as you know, my wife is the first Hispanic First Lady, and so we are very supportive and open to immigration. People get this wrong in the terminology. They say that laws like this are anti-immigrant. That's absolutely not true. We're very pro-immigration. The only people who are subject to being apprehended under this new law are people who are here illegally, who have committed a crime that ICE has caused them to put on their detainer list. If you are here and you've committed no crime whatsoever, you're never even going to be subject to this because ICE will not have you on their detainer list.
So, Governor, here's one thing that I think that I can't solve in my own head. And I know you're a compassionate man, and I know this has had to cross your mind. There are those people who are here illegally who then who are good, decent people and whatever their situation is, yada, yada, yada. But somehow or another, a bad guy gets into their life and is abusing them, beating them, raping them, whatever. And if they fear that they are going to be, sent back home and something's going to happen to them, or they just don't want to be on anybody's radar because they're pretty invisible, they won't say anything about that. And crime could go through, really horrible kinds of crime could go through the roof in those communities. How do you solve that? And do you believe that's true?
We solve that in this law because we put specific exceptions in this law. If you are a victim of a crime, if you are a witness to a crime, you will not be asked about your immigration status if you report that crime. We wanted to make sure that those people would be accepted from these provisions.
Now, they're calling this the papers, please, bill, but that's not what this does. You don't ask for papers if somebody's on a routine stop, right? I mean,
you're absolutely correct. Let me be very clear about this because a lot of critics misconstrue this as being the Arizona law. And the Arizona law that was reviewed by the United States Supreme Court, they specifically, quote, required law enforcement officers to ask about immigration status. First, I will tell you, that part of the law was upheld by the United States Supreme Court, even the liberals on the United States Supreme Court. The
wow.
Texas law does not make that requirement. What the Texas law does is it allows, but does not require, law enforcement to ask about immigration status. Let me explain to you why. And that is, when a police officer pulls over somebody, let's say in a car, and they do it for driving too fast, you know, whatever the violation may be. Let's say they walk up to the car and they look in the car, and the person in the car has tattoos on them that clearly indicates they are a member of MS-13, which, by the way, is growing in number in the state of Texas. It would be right for the police officer to ask that MS-13 member, are you here in the United States legally? And so it allows them in situations where this person could be the subject of an ICE detainer request, which an MS-13 gang member most likely would be, to make that inquiry. But it simply and absolutely does not require law enforcement officers to ask about immigration status. Anybody who says otherwise either doesn't know the law or they are misrepresenting the law.
Governor, what do you think about the progress that, and I don't want to get this into a Trump thing, about the progress of illegal immigration and the border wall, et cetera, with this administration? Without, because I don't want to put you in the middle of something here, are we moving the way we should be, or have we surrendered this?
Well, we've had a problem for decades now with regard to the legal immigration process. We have a completely flawed immigration system that must be fixed. And nothing has been done in the last few administrations, and nothing has yet been done under the current administration to fix our immigration process. Let's be clear about this. Texas, and I think America, strongly supports a robust legal immigration system. What must be done is we must implement reforms that overhaul our legal immigration system and couple that with strict enforcement against illegal immigration.
I said a few years ago that what President Obama was doing was sending a message all around the world. Come in, we're not going to enforce our own laws. And if I lived across the border in poverty, in a drug-ridden, if I lived in a place where I knew my kids had no future, and the president of the United States was saying, we're not going to enforce this, and if you get here, you're going to be here forever, I would absolutely take my kids across this border for the promise of America. And I said at the time, it's a lot of this is our fault, because we're telling them we don't care about this law. And if you are in their situation, you're going to roll the dice for a piece of this. Is it true?
Well, you're right. What Barack Obama's approach to border security was the Olay system, such as the Matador saying Olay to the bull charging at them, and just let them on through. But remember this, Glenn, and that is, why is it that so many people want to come to America as opposed to, let's say, go to Venezuela or some other place? The reason is because the United States of America, more than any other country in the entire world, is a nation of laws. Mm-hmm. And it is imperative that we as a people continue to ensure that America remains a nation of laws so that we will be the aspiration for people around the entire globe.
Has our immigration here in Texas, our illegal immigration, have you seen a decline in it?
There actually has been a decline during this calendar year, a very meaningful decline during this calendar year, where people who are coming across the border illegally has shrunk dramatically. In this last calendar year, before the one we're in right now, there were about 1,000 people crossing the border a day. And now that has shrunk dramatically compared to where it was before. But we'll need to see, because as most people know, the increase in cross-border activity typically increases during the May, June, and July months.
Have we moved our border agents closer to the border since Obama? I mean, there was this huge gap for a long time.
You're exactly right. If you're going to secure the border, the best place to secure the border is at the border.
Right.
One of the policies of the Obama administration was to remove more into the interior, the border security operations, so that people would have already crossed the border. And it simply made no sense whatsoever. And so, yes, one of the changes is to move border security closer to the border. Another is to increase and enhance border security efforts. But that is something the state of Texas is also doing. We're about to close out our new budget here in the coming weeks, where we continue to add more money from the state of Texas to secure the border, because it is important that we be a state as well as a nation of laws. We welcome people here who want to immigrate to the United States legally, but we want to make sure that if there's anybody who's not following the law will be enforced.
I would love to have you back. We're running out of time. I'd love to have you back and talk a little bit about the culture of Texas and how if we're doing anything to protect the culture of Texas. It's one of the only states left that has, or almost, I can almost say, had a unique culture, and it's really being destroyed. And I'm not intentionally or anything like that. It's just because this massive influx from people all over the world and the country who were creating jobs here, and what we're doing to protect that. But let me leave you with just this one question here: Have we signed on now officially to the Convention of States?
Yes. As of last week, Texas became the 11th state to sign on to the Convention of States, and Texas will be in the vanguard of leading that effort. Now that Texas passed it, I think many more states will come behind us. This is a common sense opportunity to return power to the people away from the entrenched forces in Washington, D.C.
I have to tell you, I think you are the best governor in the country right now. That's pretty easy to say, but the best governor I think I have ever lived under, and we're big supporters. Greg Abbott, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Glenn.
You bet.
God bless.
Great, great leader, as you heard, very well reasoned, doesn't get into hyperbole or name calling. He just does it. Love him.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury One is standing together today at Victory Plaza. That's here in Dallas, Texas. Veteran causes are really close to our heart, your heart, and the heart of Mercury One, and we are proud to continue our support. In this event, we're asking that you would donate directly to the cause through mercuryone.org. We have a page of Folds of Honor. It's an amazing thing where we've asked people to go and volunteer their time to stand for 13 minutes in the shoes of honor, the shoes, the boot prints of the fallen. It's happening down at Victory Plaza. You can watch it happen live on Facebook at Mercury One's Facebook page. And please donate, even if it's a buck, to help our veterans, mercuryone.org. Do it now.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Good news and bad news. The French have spoken, and this is the good news. Emmanuel Macron is the new president of France. He didn't just beat Marine Le Pen, he destroyed her. 66% to 34%. It was the largest margin of victory since Jacques Chirac beat out her father in 2002. Everything went really pretty much exactly as expected. Hours before the polls opened, Macron was predicted to take a 30-point lead. It ended up in being just slightly more than that.
Pollsters are right more often than that is noticed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of time, everyone likes to point out the times that they're wrong, but they're right a lot.
Now, here's why this is interesting. This is the first time I've ever paid attention to the French president. I mean, right? Have you ever cared?
I mean, I don't know that
Jacques Chirac is the last one.
Right, because, I mean, the Le Pen election in 2002, we paid attention to, talked about on the air back in the day. It's only been that movement.
Yeah, I've never really paid attention to it. I know one of them had a model, a really hot model wife That's all I know. And, you know, if our system was working right, that would be really all that the rest of the world would know about our president. He's got a hot model wife. Didn't really pay attention to France. Paid a lot of attention to France. This was really important. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
For the direction of France and the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Get this. Turnout for this election, historic low. The lowest percentage since 1969. Of the 47 million registered voters in France, 11.4 million chose to sit this one out. That is more people abstaining and staying home than voted for Le Pen.
So what was the turnout percentage? Do they have that in that article?
No, 47 million, you can do the math. 47 million, 11 million chose to sit it out. This is the most successful election Le Pen's National Front has ever had. They've never been more popular since 2002. They've doubled their base of support. He got, I think, about 18%
last
time.
He got 17.8% in his election in 2002. She's improved that over the years. This is not just a jump from 18 to this, but 33% is still, again, losing by 30. As much as this is an increase, they're actually going to change the name of the party, reportedly.
Yeah.
Because
they can't win like this.
Right, because they're just too tied to the father.
And that's good. I mean, that's good that everybody knows who they are. But now they're going to try to cover up some of this stuff. So the French people had two choices. Delay the coming storm and maintain the status quo, which is probably what I would have voted for. Or I probably would have sat it out because I wouldn't have liked either candidate. Or given into the old world, you know, European nationalism.
Right.
That was their choice. They didn't have a good option. And what they did was delay the inevitable. The status quo is what got them to this place in the first place. And so they've just sealed their fate for another 5 years. Now, here is what is really fascinating. The Russians know this, I think, better than anybody else. A couple of hours before France entered their 48-hour media blackout, before the election, a massive leak of Macron's campaign and financial dirty laundry hit the internet. Now, why would you do it just before the media blackout? Because you would know that no media is going to be able to pick this up. So you'll only have the internet, and that could work to your advantage or disadvantage. But you'd only have the internet. The way to really affect it would be to release it a little bit earlier, perhaps.
Well, they thought that the media would fight back against it. So they had no opposition here because of the ban.
Perhaps.
At least I think that was their theory at releasing.
Perhaps it was their theory. Mm-hmm. So 48 hours before, France has a media blackout. Nobody can say anything about the election or anything. And they release this. Now, it was almost a carbon copy of the DNC Podesta hack. Investigators over in France have traced it back. Exactly the same group, Fancy Bear, who's a surrogate for the Russian military intelligence. Why wouldn't you hide that? Why would you use the same people, the same DNS server? Why? Why would you do it so late in the game? Perhaps, as Stu said, it is because they wouldn't have any opposition. But I believe it's because they knew, just like the rest of the pollsters, that there was a massive trouncing coming to Le Pen, no matter what. And 11.4 million people are probably going to sit out. Can we lead to more people sitting out and being disenfranchised and just saying, I don't care who wins anymore? Not to help Le Pen win, but to add to the discontent. Releasing the information pours gasoline on a bonfire. The French already feel like I've got to settle for the status quo. But now this guy's coming in, he's facing a lame duck 5-year presidency. The French and the global media going to have a field day now exposing Macron and his party's dirty secrets. You'll notice Did you hear much fanfare that the Clinton Global Initiative closed on April 15th? Yeah, right? Right? Look that up.
This would be the time you'd want to turn it on, right?
Right. Look that up. They had problems with donations, apparently. Apparently, all of the big countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and everybody else, they decided that they didn't want to do any more goodwill. Or they decided there was no access to be purchased.
It's not shutting down.
Still, no.
They've turned. I think what you're referring to is a report that they were downsizing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Which you think would be the opposite.
Would be the opposite. You're now out of
the worry about the elections.
Why? How can the Clinton Foundation make this move and nobody notice? Nobody in the press is even noticing about their donations from these countries, that they're starting to dry up. Kind of interesting. If she were president, I can guarantee you WikiLeaks would be exposing all kinds of things. And I believe the Russians will eventually expose Trump for all kinds of things as well. Why? What do they want? They want public distrust and angst. That's what they want. If Hillary Clinton would have won, I think they would have done the same thing here. The hacks would have kept coming because they're playing the long game. The leftists, the Islamists, the alt-right are playing that game as well. What do they want? An insurrection. They want to burn the whole thing down. France just took a massive step toward burning the whole thing down. And one more thought on this. Next, the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic is taking in refugees and they oppose it. A poll a couple of years ago found that 94% of the Czech Republic favor closing the borders completely. They're not. They're standing by the EU. What are the people doing? They're starting to become anti-immigrant. Germany is also becoming hostile to the EU. What is happening around the world is that people feel, and see if you feel this way. Nobody's listening to me. Nobody is. I'm not a xenophobe. I'm not a racist. I'm not any of these things. But guys, we have got to protect and know who is coming in. I want the best and the brightest to come in. And I also will take those from war-torn countries, but I want to make sure, just like we would have done in Germany, I want to make sure they're not Nazis. I want to make sure they're not actual enemies of the United States. Nobody's listening to me about my job and my pay, and they're playing games with healthcare, and they've promised us one thing, and our healthcare costs as a family went through the roof, and I couldn't keep my doctor. I don't even know what's happening. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get insurance anymore. And then the right does it. And the right was lying to us, the GOP. Is somebody listening to me? The answer is no, far too often times. Nobody's listening to me. I have no levers to pull. There's nothing I can do to get somebody to turn around and listen to me. I can't affect change. I can't even control my own life. And I don't recognize this anymore. I don't feel like I belong even to polite society. It was one thing when I said, you know, I don't really recognize my country. And the left laughed. And now the left is saying, I don't recognize my country. And the right is laughing. I'm not laughing. I didn't laugh then. I'm not laughing now. I don't recognize my country. But more importantly, I don't recognize the truth in anything. I mean, they're now expecting me to believe that a man can say he's a woman. Just say it. I'm identifying as a woman. And I have to accept that? That a woman can identify as a black person. And blacks have to accept that? I don't even recognize the truth anymore. And I know the rich are getting richer.
And I've never been a guy who's had a problem with rich getting rich. The reason why I have a problem with rich getting rich now is because far too many times it's because they have access to banks and loans and interest rates that I could never get my hands on. Or they have enough lobbyists to rig the game their way. That's not fair. And they're telling me that I can't hold sacred the things I have always held sacred. Things about God. Things about my country. I'm told that that has no meaning, or if it does have meaning, it's all bad meaning. That's how people are feeling. And when you increase the stress of money, when you increase the stress of losing a job, not being able to make ends meet, people will listen to anybody who says, I got a plan. It's those people over there. We just get rid of those people, whoever they are, left, right, in the middle, doesn't matter. Atheist, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, doesn't matter. People will round people up when they're afraid. Thank you. Thank God the French rejected that kind of thinking this weekend. But unfortunately, as the press celebrates, because the press doesn't get it, it's not that they're intentionally, they just don't get it. They don't hear you. They don't hear Europe. And because they don't hear, they celebrate. Ooh, dodged a bullet there. Victory for us. France isn't as racist as America. No. No, you really don't get it. We
are one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
So here's something that's really interesting to me. Did you guys see over the weekend the automatic self-driving space shuttle that we have? You know we have one. Drives itself. No pilots necessary. Yeah, I didn't know that either. It's been up in space for 2 years now on a secret mission. Like, no one knows what it was doing up there for 2 years.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit ago.
Yeah. It just came out that it was coming back. It landed by itself without a pilot. It landed over the weekend.
Impressive.
A little bit. I mean, kind of one of those
where
things.
It was supposed to, or did it just come down?
Right. No. It landed where it's supposed to. No. Yeah. It landed in my driveway.
When I open up an app and I see Uber Shuttle, I will be impressed. Thank you. Okay. When you get me to work faster.
Right. But is that not incredible?
No, it
that's
is.
If that's not an example of what the hell do they have that we don't know?
I know.
I mean, they put a self-driving space shuttle up. It looks just like the space shuttle, except no windows or anything. Self-driving space shuttle.
Nobody's
up
in there. You really don't need windows.
Right. For 2 years, doing some sort of secret mission, we have absolutely no idea. And we're down here going, wow, look at my car can kind of drive itself. Yeah, we got a space shuttle up that's driving itself right now. And returning to Earth safely. No people on board. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And yet, it's a blip in the news. Nobody even recognizes the giant leaps for mankind we've made.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. I want to talk to you about the wealthiest 1%. You know, the evil wealthy 1%. I want to talk to you about the difference between ownership and stewardship. I want to talk to you about a time of profound change in the world's thinking. We begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will
fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm going through a really good phase in my life that I think anybody who is tries to stay connected to a higher power, you know, you just know when you're in sync and when you're out. And I've been really struggling to get back into deep sync. And about 4 years ago, I thought, man, I wish I could just start all over again, because things had started to back up on me. And just, you know, you start with a clean slate. It's so easy. And I think I'm going through a place that I'm breaking through. And I want to share this because I think there are a lot of people that are feeling the same way I do right now. Perhaps not. Let me start with this. What's the difference between ownership and stewardship? For instance, I own my iPad because I bought it. I paid for it. I worked for it. And you know what? Man made it. It's not a God thing. Man made it. All true, but in the real world, absolutely not true. I don't own it. We didn't make this. If it weren't for the rare earth minerals in every single chip, none of this would work. We didn't pay anybody for that. We didn't pay the owner of the rare earth minerals. We didn't pay for those things. Yeah, we paid somebody who claimed they owned those, but they didn't own them because they didn't make them. Everything I own, my car, started out with natural elements in the ground. My cotton shirt, picked by a man, woven by men, but it started out as a seed, not made by man. The sweater I'm wearing, I love it, but it didn't actually come from some fancy designer. The wool, the fabric was being, somebody had stewardship of that wool. Because I don't know about you, but I can't create sheep. When you really think about it, man has not created anything. He has rearranged things. But you didn't create anything. It's why the Native American, and you don't read this story in history, why they laughed at us when we tried to buy land from them. They would take the beads and everything else, but they would go back to the tribe and they'd laugh at us. This white man thinks that you can own land. You don't own land. You're a steward of the land. You have it for a while. They thought they were ripping us off. They didn't understand our ownership ideas. Right now, our bodies can find replacement parts and more, they're going to, in my lifetime, probably in the next 10 years, people will have an artificial heart that will be grown from you. It won't be artificial, it'll be real. They'll grow it in a 3D printer and they'll be able to take it from your cells. Not my creation, not the doctor's creation, just using the pieces and the patterns to recreate. Go ahead, scientists. Go ahead. Make your man. Form him out of dust, but use your dust, not his stardust. Go ahead, make a car, but use the minerals that you made, not the stuff you pulled out of the ground. I was doing some reading a couple of weeks ago, and I started thinking about this, and I thought, boy, how ungrateful are we? He gives us absolutely everything. And there's still a big part of me that says, look what I did. Look what I created. Worse yet, he's assigned me a job, and you, all of us, assigned me a job and a vision. And then I farmed that vision out to somebody else. He gave me work and I gave it to somebody else, not even noticing or thinking about, well, if he wanted them to do it, he could have just gone right to them. Instead, why did he go to me? Stewardship. Vision isn't to be reassigned. I never thought of it this way before. I'm kind of thinking out loud. All I know is a couple of weeks ago, I started thinking about tithing in a totally different way. And you don't have to give it to a church. 10%. Give 10% to charity. But 10% is just the start. It's not the end. 10% of tithing is supposed to come after you've given away everything else that you don't need. So you're supposed to look at everything. That's why some people, when they give 10%, it's like, well, yeah, the rich can give 10%. They wouldn't even notice. They hear that all the time. Yeah, they'll notice. But it's not the same as the widow's mite. It's not the same as somebody who is sitting there and they're looking at all of the things that they have to pay for. Are we going to make it with our house? Can we make our car payment? Trust in God. Pay it first and watch what happens. That takes real faith. I guess I'm viewing my needs and my wants in a totally different way. I don't know. I need some time to think. Do I? Because what am I doing with my think time? Am I using my think time in some internet wormhole? Because tithing and stewardship is not just about money. In fact, that probably is the least of it. It's about who owns you. Who do you serve? And the things that you have. For instance, if your house said on a cornerstone right by the door, "This is the house of God," and you really believed that you didn't own that house, that was God's house, and you were just using it, would you treat it differently? Would you not do things in your house that maybe you do now? Would you stop things that you allow for if you knew it was his and he was going to come back and go, "Hey, thanks for trashing the pad, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. Ah, great. You rented it out to partiers. Cool." Your car, anything that you own, if you were just a steward of it. How about your job? If you thought your job was actually his, you walked into his office and he said, "Hey, Stu, I need you to sit behind the desk. Just make the decisions the best you can. I'll be back. Just hold down the fort." Would you do your job differently than you do now if you knew that came from him? I contend we all would. And if we look at ourself and our jobs, our life, as just being a steward, not an owner. I'm not an owner of my time. I'm not an owner of my life. I'm a steward of my life that he gave me. How would you run your business? How would you run your schedule, your time, your children, your body? Doesn't belong to you. It's his. This is where my head's been recently. I made a list a couple of weeks ago. If I knew he had lent this to me, would it be different? I walked in the back hallway here, the back prop cage where all the props are and everything. I walked through this last weekend. I was horrified and embarrassed. And I walked by because it's just a mess. And it's a mess because we are all running like a billion miles an hour. But I thought to myself, if I knew that this building was his, not mine, and he was going to come back and walk through it, would it look like that? I think it's the Hobby Lobby thing. When we went to Hobby Lobby, did you go with me, Stu?
We talked to him on the air.
You could eat off the floor of 9 million square feet. It was unbelievable. And it's just a change in culture. It's a change in the way you perceive. It's what Mr. Hobby Lobby said. I put on under the glass on my desk, "This business is his, not mine."
That changes everything. I made a list of all the things in my life and said, if it was his, what would I be doing? Would I be doing the same thing? Almost none of them did I answer the same way. In fact, I don't think any of them did I say, oh yeah, I got this one. Yeah, he could come back and I've taken good care of this. Uh-uh. None of them. Perhaps my children and my family, but that's just a perhaps. I think we get lost and we make ourselves feel good because we do some things. I mean, I don't know if you know this as an audience, because we don't really ever talk about it because we're not looking for the accolades. But do you know that you've given between $50 and $60 million over the last 4 or 5 years to Mercury One? We've saved over 6,000 people, Christians and Yazidis from the Middle East. We're saving children from slavery. What's happening because of you is outrageous. No other country, no other agency, no other group. Nobody's doing that. You are. We're not a church. We're a group of people that just get together and say, that's got to change. It's got to change. Look at the power of stewardship that's coming from us just saying, I can't sit around while that is happening. There'll be real consequences for us. I told you 2 weeks ago, two members of our team lost their lives trying to rescue a mom and two children from the slavery of ISIS. The mom and children are free. Tonight, they're putting their head down. They're right now in the Middle East. They're getting ready to put their heads down to bed, and they are safe and free because of those two men. Those two men were sent by you because we met and I said, let's do something. Let's do the Nazarene Fund. Those children have a life today. It is a blessing to be alive at this time because there is conflict and it gives us a chance to stand up and say, no, not on my watch. Now that's what we did, just kind of saying, I want to do something. Imagine if we did all that we could, if we really gave all of our time, our talents, our surplus. Can you imagine what we could do? I don't know about you, but I'm searching for a deeper meaning, and I'm not unhappy, but I am searching for a deeper meaning and deeper connection. My job, my life, it's not meaningless, neither are yours. But perhaps we have them for a reason. I've asked myself, what more can I do in every aspect of my life? And the answer every single time is, oh my gosh, so much more. Together, we've done some really great things. And I think we're all better people for the journey, no matter where we are in that journey. We're all better for the journey that we've made together over the last 10 or 15 years. But change is in the air. Global change is in the air. A vision has been given. And each of us have a responsibility to execute that vision in our own realm, in our own lives. And the world might look at us really strangely. Our own families or coworkers might look at us and say, you're mad. Snozzberries? Who's ever heard of a snozzberry? Do you remember how Willy Wonka answered that? Remember? Snozzberries taste like snozzberries. Snozzberries! Who's ever heard of a snozzberry? We are the makers of music. We are the dreamers of dreams. That's how he answered it. But do you know where that came from? That's from a poem. Those are the first two lines of a poem. And this poem, we quote all the time and we don't know it. Listen to this. We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams, wandering by lone sea breakers and sitting by desolate streams, world losers and world forsakers on whom the pale moon gleams. Yet we are the movers and shakers of the world forever, it seems. The term movers and shakers comes from this poem.
You can't be a mover of or shaker if you don't understand that we are the music makers. We are the dreamers of dreams. And the world, we have to forsake it. Each of us has been given a job, and I, for one, need to get off my fat ass and start doing it with my whole mind, heart, strength, might, everything. I don't know if that means I sell my stuff and give it to charity. I doubt I'd ever get to that point because I'm not that good of a person, I think. But I will stop selling my time to the false gods of this world. Hopefully. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, what the hell was that about? Hopefully, you heard what you needed to hear. You, the music maker and dreamers of dreams.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Oh my gosh. My wife, timing is everything. I just checked my email during the break. Good morning. The church has an opportunity to clean the church building this month. We'd like to invite you and your family to clean this Saturday. Building will be open. With a good showing, we might be done in little as a couple of hours. Oh, and you know what? You know who sold it? Send it to me? My wife. With just this. The Becks will be there. Oh. I mean, I'm not 5 minutes away from that monologue I just did, and I'm like, no, not that.
I mean, obviously, you like God and everything, but cleaning?
Cleaning the church? Obviously. No. Can't we hire somebody to do our job?
You wanted to help, but she didn't even realize that you've already had something scheduled for weeks.
Oh, my gosh. You're right.
I feel bad about that.
Central booking radio thing that Jeff is doing.
Yes. Oh my gosh, it's huge.
Oh man,
we have to do that.
Yeah,
you can't.
Right.
You can't.
Right after that monologue, you can't prioritize church over Jeffy's fake business thing.
But isn't that the case? Isn't that the way it always happens?
Oh, it's
you're like, oh no, I really, I no, I'm gonna, to I'm turning this. Over a new leaf. What? Not that.
Oh, well, I mean, Jeffy.
We'll see Guardians of the Galaxy.
Jeffy's in the middle of seen as an 18-day mega fast thing.
For vacation. Hardcore.
And I'm with
him on this. Something to lose, baby.
I'm with him on it.
Are you really?
Yes.
Good for you.
Day two. Right till vacation.
I'm having the hardest time.
Chocolate cake in here and say, oh, look, I brought you chocolate cake. Or I thought for sure Matthew would come in here with, oh, look, here's a box of Sherry's Berries. Have some. No.
I'm unless ordering a box in. Of Sherry's
unless,
Berries.
Unless he brought it in. Unless
right.
he brought it in. Right?
You are in front of you. You are, your right spine is amazing. You are a tower of jello. You are impressive.
Thank you.
The willpower there just doesn't stop. Back in a minute.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Our Mercury One team is down at Victory Plaza. That's in Dallas with our affiliate 570 KLIF. We are very much into veterans causes. We have joined with Folds of Honor. And what Folds of Honor, the reason why it's called Folds of Honor, there are 13 folds in the American flag. And they, at a funeral of a vet, they fold that flag and then hand it to the family. And Folds of Honor wanted to kick off their campaign and raise $1 million. We have partnered with them to stand to honor the fallen. And what this is, we want to raise money to help the spouses and the children with educational scholarships, and the disabled servicemen and women that have fought in the war. We got to do a better job at taking care of our guys and our women. If you're there local, you can attend. It's down in Victory Plaza. Otherwise, you can go there and stand for 13 minutes, and they have this platform that you go up to, and they have the boots in cement. They have the boot prints of the fallen, and you stand in their place for 13 minutes while pledges come in. And they're asking you to pledge $13 for every 13 minutes of somebody. So if you have $13 you want to pledge, just pledge that $13. You can, of course, do more if you'd like, but they'd like to raise $1 million. And it's a really, really great cause. You can go to mercuryone.org/stand for more information. mercuryone.org/stand, and it will go until 7 p.m. tonight, and we sure would like you to participate, and thanks to our affiliate here in Dallas, 570 KLIF.
We're hoping to raise enough money, about the same amount that Sinclair just paid for Tribune. Looking to raise $3.9 billion.
That's all we
need.
If
we just do that, I think this will really help the cause quite a bit.
So Sinclair bought Tribune. This will be the largest television, you know, local affiliate network now in the country, right? I'm pretty sure.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. A lot of stations, they say the FCC, you know, the opposition says the FCC has turned a blind eye to its ethics here because it's going to be a very large and powerful chain in cities all across the country. But they bought Tribune Television. So this is a conservative company that they're the ones that put, what's her name on? She's that great journalist from CBS that left. She did her own thing.
Cheryl Atkinson.
Cheryl Atkinson. She's already doing something with Sinclair Broadcasting. And they're going to go after Fox. And I think what they're going to do is sweep up all the guys that have left Fox. I think they're going to recreate Fox.
So they've been reporting, saying, you know, claiming or at least rumors of that going on.
Yeah, there's two groups that are thinking about doing it. One of them is Sinclair. So, you know, what their programming will look like, I don't know. But I do know there are a lot of Fox people that are available. And Sinclair is, you know, very hands-on on their editorial opinion. They were, all of them marched, you know, lockstep with the GOP and Donald Trump. And so I don't know how that will work with people who, you know, have their own opinions. I mean, I know Cheryl Atkinson has her own opinion and she doesn't seem to mind. So we'll see. But they're going to not go after Fox. I think they're considering that Fox is going after itself. And so there needs to be another outlet.
It's typical that you would promote some conservative media company on a day like today. I mean, it's actually unbelievable.
What is today?
What's today?
Yeah, what's today?
Well, I think we're all reeling from the incredible moment that happened yesterday when you look at me like you don't even know.
No, I was going to say it with you. When
MTV announced their genderless awards.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, okay, you were on that.
I was on that. Okay, I was absolutely on that.
I didn't understand.
Now, so wait, I want to know. Because I don't have a problem. This is going to piss people off because they're going to be, what about the accomplishments of women? What about the accomplishment? What they did is best actor, and that means anybody. So it's genderless. Yeah. I don't have a problem with that. Who was the best actor?
Yep.
Doesn't matter. Black, white, male, female, who's the best one? I think that's great.
I think it's hateful.
You do.
Personally.
Okay.
To, for example, have a WNBA. That should be dissolved immediately.
Exactly.
And people should just compete altogether.
Correct.
You can have genderless, you can have pansexual, you can have male, female, every color of the rainbow.
Wait. And you can also have
males
who identify as females.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean,
all of them.
All of it.
Compete together
all 90.
To play in the NBA.
Right.
So the best players in the WNBA get open tryouts against the male players.
Now that's not right.
Why?
Because
it's open competition.
No, because male
everyone's
and females,
the same,
their
equality.
Bodies are different. Their bodies are different.
No, they're not. What? Different?
Whoa.
How dare you, sir?
Well,
or madam?
They are different. Imagine me in a muumuu right now.
We're all developing features of women.
Oh, my gosh.
Particularly in the chestral region.
Yes.
But that's really more associated with baked goods than gender. The concept is understandable. Why do these things exist? Why does the WNBA exist? It's everyone admitting that women cannot compete with men on a basketball court.
Well, what is the deal?
That is what they're doing.
What is the deal with the weightlifters? Remember the first transgendered? I'm trying to remember. What's the difference between transgendered? I'm pretending I don't know.
Right.
And transsexual.
I don't know. I'm pretending, right? I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
The story recently, I think you're referring to, was an athlete who was
somehow or another
was male at one point,
right.
Had transitioned to female and was competing against females and destroying them all,
right?
In the competition, because perhaps some hate mongers would say there was a physical difference between the male and the female,
like in muscle mass
and other features that made that person dominate the sport.
Yeah.
But I mean, if we're going to go down this road, and it's funny because the sports leagues are actually leading this battle for genderless bathrooms and such. They're the ones saying we're going to pull out our championships from your cities.
What would it be like?
The ones saying it.
What would it be like for the NFL to allow a woman to play in the NFL?
They say that they do, right?
They say that they do.
Sure.
Excuse me, what?
Like, in theory.
They do.
Someone had a female kicker try out, I think, one year.
No. We had a girl play on a high school team that my son played on, or attempted to play on.
And let them compete.
And she came on the team, played for about 6 practices, and decided that she wanted to participate in another sport.
Imagine, I mean, how can you possibly say that they have to compete against males? You're just, I mean, we have to even the playing field. That's not right. Right? That's
right.
Not right. We have to even the playing field. We have to have a certain number of women playing football.
And
imagine one of them get hit really hard, really hard. How the media would react to the guy who hit her. I mean, in the lineup.
Well, we'd have to, if we're going to even it out, then we've got to change the rules a little bit to make it even easier for them.
Oh, okay, good.
And to be honest here, at least MTV's being consistent. Because, look, we all understand that, I mean, you just judge it by track and field, where male times are much lower than female times. There's a statistical measure. You don't have to argue it. There's no way to argue it, right? So that's why they split them, and you can at least understand that. There is absolutely no reason to split men and women when it comes to acting if you don't believe in gender, right? If men and women, female actresses, absolutely have had much better performances than male actors.
But what they will say is if you only give one, as opposed to give one to each category, you are going to say, they're going to say eventually, if there's a whole bunch of men, it'll never happen if a whole bunch of women do, but if a whole bunch of men win 3 times in a row, they're going to say, this isn't fair. They're just bigots. They're going, right?
Of course they will.
If they did three years in a row of women, they would say how enlightened they are.
And this is why perhaps trapping yourself in fake arguments about tolerance is not a good idea. Because you can't unravel yourself from them. There is no way to be consistent because the points you're making aren't real. And, it's like how they always talk about this with, if you're a liar. Jeffy, you'd understand this. If you're a huge liar and you're constantly lying to everyone around you, it's hard to keep track of all the lies, and eventually you trip up and screw it up. Right.
Yeah.
You can't do it. Well, and Jeffy will tell you this, but when it comes to these ridiculous social justice issues,
they fall apart.
You can't keep them consistent.
No way,
you can't do it because they're all ridiculous.
What they do is they'll say, come on, we're not talking about women and men weightlifters. Come on, you're just bringing it to the ridiculous. That's what they say.
Yes.
When they get trapped in logic, then they say, well, that's ridiculous, because that's not going to happen. That's just not going to happen.
You're prioritizing,
for instance,
the
cakes. A baker who doesn't want to make a cake because of religion
Well, that's just going to, you know what? You have to go after those guys. Otherwise, there's going to be people who will use that excuse. Okay? You'd be like, no, they won't. And it's easy. If they have a record of going to church and that's their value system, I mean, it's really pretty easy to spot. First of all, it's a cake. You should get over it. But it's right. Really easy to spot. No, you can't. Just one is too bad. Okay. Transgendered bathrooms, where everybody gets to go wherever they want. And you can't say to a guy, get out of the women's bathroom. What happens if there's a child predator there? What if there's just a pervert that just likes to listen to women going to the bathroom?
Oh no,
that'll never happen.
That's a small percentage of cases.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And they win that every single time.
They sure do.
Do they? I mean, maybe they do.
They do. But I think the good news is what you're saying here,
I mean, that's
it's wearing off.
I hope so. I mean, that's what we're talking. Well, it is, right? I mean, that's why we play comedians already confused, saying, stop, help, I'm on your side. But you keep going farther and farther. I can't help you anymore.
We got to do an hour of just all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
We just have to do an hour of all of the stuff that we have found in the media, because it's starting to show they're overplaying their hand. The media should not be turning on them. The media should not be making fun of it or joking about any of this stuff. This is all way too serious. You get in trouble if you joke about it. But the media and the comedians, the culture is changing. And it's coming back the other direction, which may have taken longer. Think about this. In the 1990s, late 1990s, Ellen had the first gay relationship on TV. And it set the world on fire. And then it went to Will and Grace, and everybody saw, no, it just has to be funny. It's not about the relationship. It was just not, don't jam it down our throat. And so then it was okay. Now it's everywhere. You would, watching TV, you would think that the gay population is 85% in this country. You just would. I mean,
you can't have any show.
You cannot have any show with at least one gay character and one questioning character. But maybe that's just me. And look at where we've gone. We don't have a problem with that. We don't have a problem with that. We're being asked to say the twigs and berries don't count, that chromosomes don't count.
They get deleted out of science shows when science you mention shows. Chromosomes. Right. What's happening with the Bill Nye show?
Yeah, they've edited it out. That's what people have a problem with, and they're overplaying their hand. Thanks, I think, to media. It's speeding this process up.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Glad you're here. It is Monday. I hope you feel rested and refreshed. We have a good week stacking up in front of us. What are the big highlights? Any big highlights we have to watch? I know we have to watch North Korea this week.
Probably a lot more important than that would be you going to watch Guardians of the Galaxy 2 tonight.
Yes.
I'm very interested to hear your review.
Have you gone yet?
I have not. I like the first one a lot, and I don't like superhero movies.
You hate these kinds of movies. No. I've never heard you like a movie like this.
Very rarely.
Yeah. And everybody I talked to said, better than the first. I don't like hearing that because then my expectations go up. Yeah. But have you seen it yet, Jeffy?
No, I have not. I enjoyed that first one too very much. So. Yeah,
I've heard it's the worst movie ever made.
Thank you.
Oh my,
Stu.
This is
Thank
terrible,
you.
Glenn. Thank you're going to despise
you.
It.
Well, I'm going to go anyway. Fact,
you're going to go anyway.
I'm
going to
go anyway.
But wait a minute, it's not even the same characters. you can see the cameras and the shots the whole time.
Oh my gosh,
it's insane.
That's crazy. Okay, well, I'm going to go anyway, and I'll review it tomorrow.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.